The world was very different back in November 2019. That's when Dr. O recorded the interview you're about to hear with Director X. There was no COVID pandemic, and late 2019 was also well before George Floyd's death at the hands of the Minneapolis Police Department. So I want you to keep in mind that all of those things happened since we recorded this conversation. And yet the ideas that Dr. O and Director X discuss in this episode are still relevant and important today. So that's the background, that's the context. Let's get right into it.
Warning. This episode contains frank discussions of race and racism that some may find challenging to listen to. Listener discretion is advised. But it also contains stories of overcoming challenges that some may find to be inspiring. Enjoy.
Coming up on a special bonus episode of Race, Health, and Happiness, Dr. O talks with Director X, internationally acclaimed film and music video director, about the night he got shot.
I got a bullet in my back and went through two people and hit me on a dance floor. It might have paralyzed me, or who knows what it might have hit. But I also recognize how lucky I am.
About how he wants to use brain science to stop the violence, and why he's not getting support from his friends in the hip-hop community.
I've long ago stopped expecting entertainers to now also be leaders of anything. Because you wrote a great song. You now have to save our people. Like, no part of my brain says, I wonder if a Young Thug would want to get involved. Yeah, keep it moving, baby. Keep it moving.
The Race, Health, and Happiness podcast is hosted by Dr. Anyi Norum, certified public health physician specialist and family doctor. The views expressed by Dr. O's guests are their own and do not necessarily represent her opinions or those of the podcast. And now, here's Dr. O.
We live in a world where Black, Indigenous, and other people of color are more and more aware of the blatant and subtle ways that systemic racism impacts our lives. This podcast is about how to stay healthy and happy despite all that noise. I am delighted to be in the presence of Director X, formerly known as Little X, whose career is rooted in hip-hop culture and all its complexities and creativities. For those who need a reminder, Director X is the Torontonian who directed visually distinctive videos for popular artists including Drake, Kendrick Lamar, Rihanna, Jay-Z, Justin Bieber, and Sean Paul, and many, many more. And as if that was not enough, Director X has founded an organization, Operation Prefrontal Cortex. It's a program harnessing the power of mindfulness and meditation to help reduce the incidence of gun and mass violence in Toronto. Director X, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thinking about hip-hop culture, it's obviously been a big part of your life. So, you know, kind of thinking back to the beginnings, how did you discover hip-hop? Or actually, better yet, how did hip-hop discover you?
I remember my sister bought the vinyl for Run-DMC, Raising Hell. The hit record was Run-DMC and Aerosmith, Walk This Way.
Yes, I remember that.
That was the big hit. So I'm sure that's what motivated her to go get it. And then she went and picked that up, and that was the beginning.
When you started to hear that, you were just kind of hooked. You loved was it the beat? Was it the lifestyle? Was it the identity? What was it?
I don't know. The whole thing just kind of resonated. You know, it just all resonated. It felt like there is a bit of seeing yourself, especially when the music video culture came about, right? There's just something about that, you know, the stage, when you don't see yourself on the stage, it speaks to the subconscious. So hip hop was when I began to see people that look like me.
And hip hop definitely has had a tradition of being kind of like unapologetically honest about what was going on, because there had been artists, you know, that of course there had been like Motown, the 80s, the, you know, Jacksons, there's lots of different things that happened, but this was really the music of the streets initially, mm-hmm. right? What are your thoughts on the violence that's reflected in hip hop music?
So it's a natural instinct for especially men to feel like, oh, you're tough. And now look at the people drawn to you because you're tough. Well, if I'm tough, then people will be drawn to me. So there's a part of that in the culture that begins to feed itself, right?
Fair enough. And I mean, at the end of the day, as you said, the hip hop was reflecting, or it still reflects, the reality of the gun violence. Mm-hmm. And there are reasons for that. There's instinct, but there's also, you know, societal neglect. There's issues of poverty. There's other things that predispose people. But certainly the hip hop reflects the reality. And sometimes, I guess,
I mean,
hip hop can influence the reality too.
It can, but we can pretty safely say poverty and violence go hand in hand. Anywhere you go and you find poor people, regardless of race, there's a very base level of action and consequence that's going on. You know what I'm saying? So socioeconomics is a big part of what we have happening, especially in our community over here, right? Because mm-hmm. then racism gets tied in to poverty and all those things, right? So that's a big part of it.
But really thinking about how all of those things get intertwined, and although we see it on the screen, for a lot of people, it becomes a reality. And in fact, for you, in December of 2015, the gun violence became very real in your own life. Do you mm-hmm. want to just talk about that?
I got a bullet in my back and went through two people and hit me on a dance floor. It was at my party, New Year's. Everyone was dressed up. It was a New Year's party. And I want to say a nice part of town, but it wasn't, you know what I mean? I wasn't in some basement club after hour. Like it was a New Year's party in a nice club. But the difference between putting my weight on my left leg, it might have missed me, and my weight more on my right leg, it might have paralyzed me, or who knows what it might have hit. So I was very, very lucky.
And was it a targeted shooting or somebody? Did somebody just like come into the party and start spraying bullets? Like,
no, it was one shot. We don't know. Oh. We don't know. I mean, look, this is Toronto. As nobody's proudly declaring they shot Director X.
Right.
You get no points. You probably get more trouble than you get points. So okay. I don't know. The streets don't know. We don't know.
And so how was that experience for you? I mean, I imagine it's like horribly painful, but also just psychologically, like what was going through your mind during that time?
It's very different. It's very different for everybody. So I walked away. I walked away from it. I was lucky. You know, right? They cut the bullet out and I went about my business. I actually got on a flight the next day. So I'm lucky.
Wow.
But I also recognize how lucky I am.
That's amazing that you were able to fly out the next day. But it seemed like no matter what, that had an impact, because years later, you, you know, gave the TED Talk where you, you know, gave a message to your shooter. The shooter, mm-hmm. as you said, you don't know, but a very powerful message. So how did that come about?
They asked me to do a TED Talk, and so, or TEDx Toronto. So I had to decide what I wanted to do. So I was thinking about doing something about all this information I had gathered, just come across about the brain. I'd come across some information about the brains of violent and aggressive people. They found that there's differences between them and the average person. They found the prefrontal cortex, where decision-making happens, was small, lacked volume and gray matter. And they found that the amygdala was too large, overactive, and susceptible to stress. Then I came across some other studies about meditation, and they said, oh, meditation gives volume to your prefrontal cortex and shrinks your amygdala. Oh, well, that's just, so I decided to do a talk about that, about these two obvious connections. Here's an issue, and then here, and as I dug in even more, I began to find more information about stress. Your hippocampus, where learning and memory happen, and your amygdala, where it says emotional control. If the stress is, you're stressed enough, they will hardwire in pathways that create a fight or flight, constant state of fight or flight. Which again gets back into all the violent behavior.
It's a stress response.
So that, you know, we all knew group people growing up. It didn't take nothing for them to snap. Mm-hmm. Not one. What? They're just gone.
Yeah.
Right. And we see it in our police. We see it all over the place. Right. And there's another sidebar conversation about power and safety in your power that also adds to it. But there you go with that. And then there's also a connection between your amygdala and your prefrontal cortex, so your decision-making and your emotions, that if you get overstressed, will shut down, just turn off. And then you go on instinct, which is the blackout that you hear about. Where people, oh, I don't know what happened. I blacked out. And next thing I knew, I was doing this thing. The brain says enough thinking.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really powerful that, you know, yes, you were involved in this project where you're looking at the impacts of, you know, the different things that the brain can do and the abilities of the brain. But then you went back to thinking about your shooter, right? Like, I actually am really inspired by the way that you approached it, because a lot of times people kind of demonize people who engage in violence, right? They're either considered like evil or called names. So lots of people do it, right? The media does it. Doctors do it. You know what I mean? Really kind of marginalizing people in society and writing them off.
I think there's a part of that. So in our super buttoned up polite society where you have to swallow a lot of abuse, whatever, from a cop, a superior, a teacher, a parent, a loved one. You just have to swallow, swallow, swallow. We go around looking for these moments to be righteously angry and unleash, right? In that, in a safe space, which is what road rage is, in my opinion, right? Mm. You're in a protected space. You are righteously wronged. How dare you? And then people lose their mind. But it's not so much they're that angry over being cut off as much as it's their chance to release all the times they've been pushed on and haven't had a chance to respond. And there's a danger in righteous anger, I believe. You know, you're walking down the street, someone bumps into you. Maybe you say something, maybe you walk on. You're walking down the street with your mom and someone bumps into your mom. Well, now you've got to, they did bump your mom, right? So we have these places in society where you're allowed to get angry, right? And then you use it as a release. And I'm even watched now when I'm in debates or in arguments and I see someone, I feel them back down or they give me ground. I pay attention to the instinct to want to pounce. I don't know if you felt it or noticed it, but when someone gives you a little ground, you have that animal instinct. They're getting, get them.
Right.
Right. And then, so I've watched that and now at least observe it. And I think meditation has helped me to observe as opposed to, because when you talk about it's not that you don't feel these things. You feel them, but you don't, the involuntary reaction isn't there. So many times what many people will tell you about meditation is that someone says something and then you have a moment to yourself like, I want to do this thing. I want to say these things. I want to react. And there was a time when, boy, you would have got a reaction. But now I don't have that need. So you recognize it. It doesn't change who you are in a way. You know what I mean? It's not this like right. You feel you nothing. You feel it and you can awareness. Recognize it. You have an awareness okay. of a feeling. But again, your reaction to it is more your decision.
So you practice meditation mm-hmm. and now you've seen the science around this and now you're really interested in sharing that with young people. And actually you're doing this through Operation Prefrontal Cortex. So yes. Let's talk about that.
Operation Prefrontal Cortex is an organization. Our mission is to reduce violence through mindfulness and meditation. So based in the science of what this is, and there's a part of it is just awareness to what's going on to everybody, to understanding where the behavior comes from. In the brain, where it comes from in your past or in your circumstances and where it can be changed. The program is to get it into schools on all levels, top to bottom. That's where that's our ounce of prevention. That's where we get to not only the kids that are in the streets with guns, that's where we could have reached the van attacker. That's where we could have reached the Greektown shooter. That's where we could have reached these school shooters in America. That's where we'll find them. Because the whole point, the whole reason they're lashing out is that they feel unloved. They feel unseen. That socially, they can't interact with people, and they react to it. At one point, they just say, "All right, you all have hurt me. I'm hurting all y'all. I don't care." We could get those kids there. We can reach them there in school. At one point, we all pass through the school system. There's the community groups in the community. This one more so is about reaching the people that are affected by the violence, live around it. I mean, this is being in a neighborhood like that, knowing people that have been shot. There is the correctional system for the kids that, you know, are now in the system right. where we can help them truly rehabilitate, truly build the brain the way, you know, you talk about jailhouse bodies. Mm-hmm. We could have jailhouse brains where we really build them and give them the tools they need to go to reverse the damage. You know, I have a friend who approached me at a speaking engagement, said that one of his buddies just got out of jail and was going, there are two paths, back to jail or grave, period. He was wiling, he said. And he showed him the TEDx, showed him the TED Talk, and he started meditating. He said he's a whole new guy now, whole new person.
So what is the vision? Where would you like it to go? And where are you now in that journey towards where you want to be?
I mean, where I want to be is in every single school. I think that's our answer prevention. We need to be
in Toronto or in the country or
the world. Like, there comes a point where you know what the problem is. You got to do something. We know what it is. Here's the science. We are living in an age where, you know, scientists are telling us we have a decade left before the planet's completely irreversible climate change. You know, people with lung cancer because cigarette executives wouldn't listen to the science. They covered it up. Well, here we are again. Here's a moment. The science that we have epidemics of violence around the world. And we're like, what do we do? What if we got more cops? What if we did this? What if we did that? Theater groups and sports programs and all this. No, it's the brain. It's happening in the brain. We know what causes it. We know what those causes now affect. And we also know how to reverse it. So, and it doesn't take much to do.
And do you think meditation is the key?
It's the key to dealing with it. It'd be nice to end structural racism. That'd be wonderful. Good luck with that.
Thank you.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But we can give people the tools to deal with it.
Right.
With mindfulness and meditation. I'm not disregarding the real world and how things get to the way they are, but we have to be able to deal with it. We have to now take, and that now gives us ability to move on. Because what happens, we have structural racism that causes young people to grow up in these abusive, neglectful environments that now have their brains wired in such a way that they're much more reactive to lash out in violent ways. Then they lash out in violent ways, and then the structural racist system says, see, that's why I put you guys in little boxes, because you're violent.
Right.
Right? So the
loop begins. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
How much money have they given to the police as of late because of the violence that's happening in the community? People are literally out here openly saying, you know what we should start doing? Just stopping black people and checking them. I mean, that should be a law. That should just be something you're allowed to do as a police officer. Just see a black person, harass them. These are reporters that are writing this in national newspapers. These are actual arguments they're making. So it's not a matter of, like I said, we have to give people the tools to deal with it. And then on the flip side of it, you have police that are doing crazy things to citizens. And so the backlash on the police is the same thing. Y'all are crazy. We hate you. All right. Well, that's abuse and neglect in its own way to them, which stresses them out, which doubles it down. And then we just keep digging these holes, right? And we have to understand what is the cause and how we can alleviate, take the pressure off, right? So if we didn't have a police force that was out there aggressively policing the community and people, then people may be a little more open to them. And if we didn't have young people that were so you know, snapping to it, to get into short fused, then we could ease off. So there's a lot of pressure we could ease off and get us to a place. It's a sensible thing. Again, this is rooted in the science. Meditation might sound like granola bars and yoga mats, but it's not. Now we must recognize our own bias. Say, my thought about this activity is biased. I now recognize that. Now let me get down to the nitty gritty. Let me get down to the brass tacks and deal what's going on.
No, I agree. And I think the merits of meditation are starting to resonate within medicine as well, right? I think there are societies, so particularly in Asia and other communities, so they might not have called it, you know, mindfulness the same way, but meditation has, you know, been in a number of different societies for centuries, but has been, you know, largely ignored. But I think more and more, as you said, the science is growing. But I just kind of also want to reiterate that it's not like a new thing from the science, but this is something that actually has been passed down as wisdom through centuries because it works.
And now the studies are catching up.
There you go. And so for you, in your own life, do you think that meditation and mindfulness has had a really positive impact for you?
Of course.
Have you felt that?
Of course. I wish I knew about this in my 20s. I was buck wild. You know, so not even my 20s, all my life. What that could have meant, right? What the benefits. Because beyond even what reversing the effects of damaging environments and damaging people and damaging workplaces. Young people that meditate have better working memory. Their school performance is much better. Their cognitive performance is much better. They have more friends. They're more popular. They have less anxiety, less negative feelings. It multiplies and multiplies and multiplies. So before we even get into addressing the violence in our community, if we're serious about all our talk about wanting young people to learn and learn in healthy environments, we should be doing this tomorrow.
No, I hear you as far as the well-being, the potential to really invest in young people and increasing their well-being. And so that makes me think, I'm going to circle back then, because, you know, we started off talking about hip hop. So, you know, what do you think are there hip hop artists or, you know, like you know, quite a few people in the industry, we've talked about, you know, that influence that hip hop can have, not as a cause of violence, but that influence. Do you think there's a role to play for artists to, you know, start to kind of do this type of work or similar work?
If they so feel to. I've long ago stopped expecting entertainers to now also be leaders of anything, because you wrote a great song. You now have to save our people. If J. Cole and Kendrick Lamar, there's people who are into it and they talk about it and they live in that space, and that's great. That's what they feel to do. But I don't think it's a responsibility of a kid that we have to put on it. Some kid in their 20s. Who's just been living their life and then one day makes a hit song and now we're like, oh, by the way, save the world.
I wouldn't say save the world, but I find that surprising because, so, you know, working as a, you know, a physician, black female physician, in everything that I do and in every ounce of privilege or power, you talked about power I have, I'm thinking about how to empower the youth. I don't have the privilege and the platform of some of these artists, and a lot of the professors and professionals that I know who want to do that outreach don't have that platform. So I just think it's kind of strange that, like, a person could benefit from having influence. Like when an artist says, wear this chain, drink this thing, you know, drink this alcohol, drink or whatever, everybody follows. That is that platform. One benefits from the influence one has with the young people. So why not also have a positive influence?
They're not playing a role. They're not acting. When they say, I got this car, I have this money, I put these girls in the car because they like my chain, I took them to my mansion, and then we got on a yacht and we had sex. That's not a role they're playing. That was what they did. That is what they're concerned with. They're writing what they know. That is really what they're about. That is what they are about. And then when they sing, I'll kill you, well, maybe they're doing a little bravado, but I bet you they got a couple people in their crew that might. They're not acting, but I got to really make this clear for everyone. Looking at people that do not talk about these things and saying, why don't you talk about these things? Because they don't care. They don't talk about these things because they really don't care. Do not look at, you know, you understand what I'm saying? Judge people by their actions. No part of my brain says, I wonder if Young Thug would want to get involved.
Okay. All right. I'm learning. Yes, right?
Yeah, my journey keep too. It moving, baby. Everybody's keep it in, moving. Keep
everybody's
moving.
On their yeah, journey. Man. Okay. Well, and so I really commend you because, you know, you're walking this talk and practicing meditation. So part of this podcast is to think about, okay, collectively, how does one improve health? But also on a personal level, you know, thinking about wellness and well-being. So, you know, As we wrap up, I'm curious, you know, in your own life, what brings you joy?
What brings me joy? I mean, creating. I'm a director. I love to make things. I love to, you know, especially now, you know, to come up with an idea and make it a movie or make it a TV show or make it a, you know, those are really exciting to me. I still love making a great music video, a great piece of art, something visually that's stimulating, maybe something that really wrenches your heart. So that brings me joy, especially that when you really visually make something that is engaging, but also the content itself has meaning and means something to the human condition and the human story.
Fantastic. And just last thing, is there anything else you want, you know, everybody who's listening to know about Operation Prefrontal Cortex?
Operation Prefrontal Cortex, you can check us out at www.op-pfc.com. And my Instagram is Director X. real simple. The Instagram for Operation Prefrontal Cortex is op.pfc. And if you just want to give us some money to help the program, gofundme.com/op-pfc.
Thank you, Dr. X.
Thank you.
I'm Dr. Carl Cabasel. This is Dr. Oni Norum, Dr. O, and we are very pleased today to have Director X on the show. When I think of him and his work, I think of a very talented visual artist, music videos, film, but he's decided to use his platform to promote the idea that mindfulness, meditation, all of these things can help to reduce violence in areas where violence seems to be epidemic.
Yeah, and I think it's you know, something to be applauded, because he certainly, as you said, comes from the music industry. And, you know, some of us think of the video like Hotline Bling and other things, right? But then he also was the victim of gun violence. And so he's decided to kind of take this this episode of his life, which, you know, was painful, and actually convert it into a positive so that he can have a positive impact on youth. So I think that's fantastic.
Obviously, there's good evidence to show that mindfulness is helpful. There's also evidence that community-based interventions can work to reduce violence in neighborhoods and communities.
Yes. So, I mean, there's two pieces to that. So one, there certainly is evidence around mindfulness and meditation as an approach to reducing stress, and also for, you know, being complementary in addressing, you know, psychiatric illnesses and disorders. So really, it can be helpful for mental health. Now, when it comes to gun violence, because his program kind of makes the link between the two, the jury's out on whether or not mindfulness fully plays a role in reducing gun violence. But there are some studies. And so he has looked at some of those studies. And so did I looked at some systematic reviews. And there seems to be some link, but I would say it's not really an absolute causal relationship that we can hang our hats on. But there is evidence that where communities and different sectors, so like police, the city, et cetera, come together really and have an intervention and invest in youth to reduce gun violence, it is possible. Because I think some people think these youth are kind of doomed to these outcomes, and it is not true. So I think it's really important to invest those efforts. And I think it's great that Director X is doing that.
Mm-hmm. And certainly, you know, I think he's taken disparate pieces of evidence, tried to knit them together. And again, this is a pilot project, his project Prefrontal Cortex, where he wants to see if bringing in the mindfulness, the meditation, can help young people to reduce the violence that they experience and that they cause.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that's exactly it. He's talking about a pilot project. So for me as a physician, I'm just really curious about what the results will be. But I think overall, again, we know that mindfulness can be helpful. It's helpful in my own life. I do practice it and has been very helpful both professionally and personally. So
okay. Well, now I know typically we as doctors will often not be the best listeners. We might jump in when a patient is talking. In this case, I really liked how you let Director X make his case. You listened, you didn't interrupt him. And I think that's important, even though what he's talking about may not be fully supported by all the evidence that we're aware of.
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, absolutely. Physicians, and, you know, I am guilty of this too. We jump in and we interrupt. The studies show like within 6 to 15 seconds, like we ask somebody, how are you today? And then we just jump right in. So, but I was intentional in listening, because I think that is really the core of race, health, and happiness. If I had all of the answers, then, you know, as a physician, then maybe that's like a 1 hour talk and I'm like, done, solved it. But actually, there is a need to listen to other people's experiences and also listen to communities about, you know, alternative solutions. And so that, for me, it was really important to hear his perspective and point of view, even if he doesn't have a formal background in neuroscience. And then the homework is up to me to kind of look at the evidence using a critical lens, but also, like I said, there is quite a bit of evidence support mindfulness as a form of stress reduction. And we know that, you know, it is possible to curb gun violence within urban youth. we had Director X here, and I'm very curious and excited to hear about the results of this pilot program. There is evidence for mindfulness and meditation in reducing stress. So, you know, that piece makes sense. And then on the other hand, we also know that where there are investments and interventions with urban youth to reduce gun violence, many of them end up being successful. So, you know, ultimately, I think it's just a beautiful thing that he has decided to invest in community in this way. That being said, this is Dr. O wishing you health and happiness on your journey.
The Race, Health, and Happiness podcast was created by Dr. Onyi Norum, and she's our host. The show is produced, written, and edited by yours truly, Dr. Carl Cabasell. Our technical producer is Obadiah George. Associate producer is Shamipe Oni. Original music and our theme song composed and performed by Gold Keys. If you're looking for a little slice of audio happiness, you can check out his music on Spotify and YouTube, or get the links in our show notes. That's Gold Keys, all one word, ending with a Z. Do you have questions, feedback, ideas to share? We would love to hear from you. You can connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at RaceHealthHappy, and check out the show notes for links to the research that was referenced in this episode, as well as other bonus material. Our website is racehealthhappiness.com. Thank you to Director X for sharing his perspectives. Thanks to Sarah Basso and the whole team at Project Prefrontal Cortex. And special thanks to Wendy Vincent at convomedia.com for making this special episode possible. And thank you for listening to Race, Health, and Happiness. Please subscribe to us anywhere you get your favorite podcasts. I'm Dr. Carl Cabasell, and we'll talk with you soon.